Good evening, Detroit Lakes. This is the Vikings Territory Breakdown. I am your host, Joe Johnson, owner of VikingsTerritory.com, PurplePTSD.com, and MiniIce.com, as well as about 100 other sites that are launching in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So, it'll be an interesting, sleepless Fortnite for me. Four score. Anyway, someone was
around,
was around for
how
that.
How do you do it, Joe? How do you do it, and why do you do it? That's what I'd like.
Those
My
questions.
Good.
It's a Venn diagram that becomes a perfect circle, and the answer is I don't know. I was gonna make a joke about Joe being around for Abraham Lincoln, that quote from Abraham Lincoln, but now I'm explaining it, and the timing's wrong. So
yeah.
You think after what 3 to 4 years of podcasting together we'd have some sort of rapport, but Mr. Joe Oberle is here as always. How are you doing, man?
Good. That's my trademark. Step on somebody else's touchdown call. That's what I'm known for. So I gotta keep going with it. No,
we
great
all
to be
focus
here.
On our brand. Yeah, it is. It's things are looking up, I guess. I don't know. I might be in a better mood than I was last week. For people that were tuning in last week, I was a little down. But you and Mr. Tim McNiff found a way to get me excited about the offseason somehow. And we are, again, joined by Mr. McNiff. How are you, my friend?
I think we should just be clear to people that the only reason I'm here is because somebody else said no again. So, yeah. I'm that guy you call when the fourth person doesn't show up for your round of golf. Yeah, I'll be there. Where are we playing?
Hey, Oberle, you told me Tice would be here. You give me McNiff?
we like to keep people on their toes.
Since Tice isn't here, I'm going to say it's an upgrade. So there you go.
Hey, I don't think that these radio waves reach Seattle, so I think we'll be fine. We actually have a special guest, as people have heard in the background here during the introduction. Mr. Joe Oakley, why don't you introduce your friend?
My friend, okay. Yeah, we are a crowded house here today. We already got the three regulars, and joining us is Mark Craig from the Star Tribune, a longtime sports writer from golf and football, NFL, Vikings, and also known as the sole Hall of Fame voter for the Vikings. I wish for the NFL in town. So Mark Craig joins us. We're glad to have you. How you doing, Mark?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. I have a million different questions for you, and I will admit my ignorance for this subject. But about 5 to 6 weeks ago, Mr. Bob Sansevier, who writes a weekly column for VikingsTerritory.com, wrote an article essentially discussing the 1 year that he was like sort of the Tim McNiff of Hall of Fame voters. He got to go for just 1 year back in like the late 80s, early 90s, and he described the process. And I wasn't aware that there was basically one guy per market. I guess I never really looked into it. I thought it was maybe like an Academy Awards thing where – you know, other Hall of Famers vote or something. But I would be remiss if we didn't start by talking about Jared Allen, what you thought about his bid this year. Did you expect him to go maybe as far as he did? What are your expectations for him moving forward?
You always got to look at who the class that they're in with. I mean, this year there were two locks. I mean, Peyton Manning, the discussion on Peyton Manning took 21 seconds, and it's basically a person raising their hand and saying Peyton Manning, and we all laugh, and then it's over. So he was in on 21 seconds, and then Charles Woodson was a little bit longer discussion, but he was considered a lock. And then there was the longest discussion was on Calvin Johnson. I was surprised that he would get in his first year. But he ended up getting in on his first year. So right there, you got three first-year guys out of the five that can, modern-era guys that can get in. So that leaves room for two more. So Jared was kind of out of luck this year, I think, considering it was down to three spots, and then Calvin Johnson gets that third spot. or gets the third spot, and then you had a bunch of guys that have been waiting around forever. You know, John Lynch, I feel like we've been talking about John Lynch since Abraham Lincoln. He gets in on his eighth year of eligibility, or eight straight years as a finalist. And then another guy that I thought would have gotten in earlier, but there was a logjam at offensive lineman that was broken up with Mawai getting in 1 year, Steve Hutchinson getting in last year, and then this year Alan Faneca, his sixth year of eligibility, is a six-time All-Pro first team, would have been seven times if he hadn't had to play tackle 1 year because of injuries. So you look at a guy like him that waits 6 years, you think of the TOs that, get offended because they're not in the first year. Once you're in, you're in. It's there is no special wing for the first ballot guys. But Lynch and Faneca got those other two spots. Like a lot of guys, has to wait. And you look through history, the guys who have had to wait, beyond a year, that's a pretty impressive list. And it includes guys like Alan Page.
Mark, you presented Jared Allen to the committee. I mean, that's part of your duties when there's a guy in your area or your team that you cover is up for it. Can you tell us a little bit of what that process is like, and how do you change it up next year when you go back there and put his case forward again?
Well, yeah, I think you do have to change up because you look at the fact that especially this year when he didn't even make the cut from 15 to 10. Sometimes I feel bad for these guys. I almost feel like we should. There's a lot of things that could change that would maybe make it better. But one thing I feel like is publicizing 15 guys, and sometimes guys get stuck in that they don't make it from 15. They don't make it the cut to 10. Most Hall of Fame selectors will tell you that the cut from 15 to 10, not that it's easy, but it is infinitely easier than that cut from 10 to 5. Because then you cut from 10 to 5, and then you vote yes or no on those remaining five. So, to me, you change it up when they don't make – I mean, obviously, you can't change his career. And sometimes I think selectors take too much credit or too much blame. I didn't get Randy Moss in as his first ballot Hall of Famer. It was Randy Moss being Randy Moss. Same thing with Randall McDaniel, John Randall. Those guys weren't first ballot guys, but – those are guys that I spoke about. And Hutch last year, I helped present that case. Wasn't the lead guy on that, but, talked about him. So you see both ends of it. And with Jared, it was not – I was surprised. And I'm going to have to ask around and find out why there was virtually zero discussion on him. We just kind of moved it. No one had anything to say. And I've seen that happen before on guys as good as Will Shields, his first year, they got done with the presentation. And then I don't know if it's people run out of steam because you'll find that the discussions earlier in the process, unless it's a Tagliabue at the end or something like that, but the guys early in the process tend to have longer discussions. And as you get toward the end, that meeting was almost 9 hours long. So I have to find out why. But getting back to my original point was why publicize 15 whenever you tend to have guys that come back year after year after year. They're in that 15 and then they don't get in. It's almost like we should be talking about a narrower field once we get to this point.
Mm. Did Kansas City help you present Jared Allen?
The now late Therese Paylor, who passed away a couple of days after the Super Bowl, selector, real outstanding reporter, well-known guy. He died. He's only 37 years old, 2 days after the Super Bowl.
I saw that.
He spoke up on Jared. Then there was nothing else after that. Jared's discussion was eight minutes. It was the second shortest from Peyton Manning being – and it was a couple seconds shorter than Rondé Barber's. It was just like 8 minutes and 20 seconds. So, yeah, I like the time. I'll just kind of get a feel. Calvin Johnson was the longest, over 39 minutes.
So when you're having that discussion, I mean, your presentation, you're obviously putting out their career, their stats, what they've accomplished, this, that. Do you guys talk about other things, too, like what kind of person they were, how they
off the field issues?
Is that ever, Does that ever come into the discussion?
Yeah, that doesn't come into play. You're instructed that, you know, whether they were a good guy, you know, and people have said that over the years, you know, T.I. wasn't a good guy. Wasn't good with the media. That's not what torpedoed. I mean, I can't give details, but that's not what it wasn't. T.O. didn't get in on year three because the media didn't like him. I mean, there's a lot of guys the media doesn't like and players that don't like the media. Randy Moss didn't like the media. I didn't particularly care for Randy Moss, but, you know, Randy Moss was a Hall of Fame player. T.O., he was in my, you know, final 10. I don't know. I'm sure he made the final 10 each year, but I had him on my ballot. You know, I didn't care for him. I didn't really know him, but, you know, that's irrelevant. You know, people have said that, you know, guys don't get in because of that. I don't believe that. But no, you talk about impact on the game, you know, just numerous things. But you try to go beyond the statistics, especially because, you know, the game changes so much, and especially when it comes to receivers. I mean, you know, forever there was a log jam with Chris Carter, Tim Brown, and
Andre Reed.
Andre Reed. Oh my gosh, we gave those presentations forever, and Chris was the first one to get in, and basically it boiled down to, you know, people were saying, well, you know, it was Wes Welker, you know, a Hall of Famer based on his numbers, and to me it boiled down to Chris Carter had 130 touchdowns, and at the time that was, I don't know, third or whatever in NFL history. And it was like, okay, here's how long Wes Welker had, I don't know, 40 some or whatever it was. A lot of catches, the game's changed. But I said, you know, Wes Welker would have to play, I think it was like 28 years to at his pace or whatever it was. And so to me, it was, you know, scoring for Chris. You know, and a lot of it, we talk a lot about the eye test, and, you know, a guy like Chris Carter, his hands.
They were pretty good. He was pretty good.
The way that he could maneuver, you know, they talk about stretching the field, you know, vertically, you know, he stretched the field horizontally with how he could work the sidelines, and was just a Hall of Fame player visually. So, yeah, you end up, a lot of it's the eye test because you're, and then when you get to the older guys, someone that maybe we haven't seen, you have to do a little bit more research. It takes a lot of time, and there's a lot of effort that goes into this. You know, we don't just roll out of bed that day and say, oh, you know, who do we got? You know,
one more throughout the year. I'm sorry, but one more quick question on the process. How much interaction do you have with the candidate when this is happening? I mean, I'm sure you had to go back and forth with Chris, and once he didn't get in again, and then say, you know, what are we going to do next year? I mean, how much of there is that, or is there any at all?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, you talk to, you know, and you talk about a lot of different personalities. I mean, Chris was not happy that he wasn't a first year guy. I think Chris went there that first year thinking this is it, you know, and was extremely upset. But a guy like Jared was like, hey, you know, if I get in, I get in. If I don't, I don't. And I know he's not happy, but I you know, there's some guys roll with the punches. Other guys want to punch someone.
Hey, Mark, if I might, so years ago, I was at the Super Bowl, the Packers and the Broncos, and it was the year Paul Krause got in. And I'm on the field, and it was media day, and I see the legendary Paul Zimmerman, who wrote Dr. Z, who wrote for Sports Illustrated forever. And I'm like, that's my soundbite. I can get Dr. Z talking about Paul Krause. And so I'm like all nervous to ask him a question. And he stops in the field, and he'll get me my question. And I ask him about Krause getting in. And he says, you know, for years I thought Krause played a little soft, but then I saw on TV somewhere that's kind of what the Vikings asked him to do. And then I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe. And I wanted to like say, what the bleep? You're telling me you watched like NFL films and you saw this and it changed your mind? And I was so massively disappointed by that. So, I mean, so I just, without naming names, do you ever get guys that say stuff and you're just like, did you just roll out of bed this morning? And then if you would, the other thing I'd like to ask you about is the potential of Jim Marshall making the Hall of Fame while Jim Marshall is still on this planet. Does it exist?
Yeah, the first part, you know, Dr. Z, I'm surprised to hear that because, you know, Dr., you know, you talk about one of the most
well-respected guys.
that, our careers obviously overlapped. I was never in the Hall of Fame room with him. By the time I was doing it, I did a handful of years when Sid was still saying that he was going to go, and then Sid at the last minute didn't go. And I was at the Super Bowl anyway, so I would do it. But I was always preparing as if Sid wasn't going to go until they finally decided to move him aside because they knew he wasn't going to come again. But, you know, Sid, he wasn't going to give it up. So my first one was Randall McDaniel. And my first year I walk in there and I'm looking around the room. And obviously it's the most, you know, well-respected people that there is in the business. And I had Randall McDaniel, John Randall, and Chris Carter. So it was like, oh, okay. So, yeah, it was a pretty sleepless night the night before that. And Randall McDaniel got in that year, which I was maybe his second or third crack at it, which if there's a guard in NFL history that should be in his first ballot, Randall's in that top handful of guys. But getting back to, you know, Dr. Z, I'm surprised because, yeah, he was well known for – you know, knowing the league inside and out. But even that, you know, that's been, what, over 20 years. Information, you know, it's hard to believe now without, you know, that there was a time before the internet when we actually had to make little notes in our media guides to remember things and look at dictionaries and stuff. But, yeah, maybe there wasn't as much information readily available to them. But I get the overall right now, especially now, there's 48 selectors. Each market has at least one, and then there's at-large guys, and they're adding on to the committee as well. But I think everyone takes it extremely seriously and does a lot of homework on it. And then the other part is that never-ending question about Jim Marshall is, and, you know, I have spent a lot of time talking to Jim and his wife, and yeah, you know, those are the guys I feel bad for because even if he doesn't get in. You know, it doesn't change. I mean, obviously, he'd become a Hall of Famer, but Jim Marshall is great. And I think too many times we're caught up, in, especially in today's society, that you're either a Hall of Famer or you're a third string nobody. And it's like if you say that someone asks you, do you think so-and-so is a Hall of Famer? And you hesitate because... you know, maybe an extremely good player, and you don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And I'm not talking about Jim because I do think he's a Hall of Famer. But you'll say, well, you know, there's a Hall of Very Good. Well, instantly now, with everything being completely black and white, it's, well, you think he was a terrible player. No, the Hall of Fame should be hard to get into. You know, I think as far as Jim's case, unfortunately, when they had that centennial class last year and they had the opportunity to open it up, and that centennial class, the old timers in that class were picked by a separate blue ribbon committee, which also included guys like Bill Belichick. And when they selected that committee and didn't put Jim on it, that hurt because that was a chance to get a guy that, you know, played such a high percentage of the first 100 years in the NFL and was the heart and soul and, of Bud Grant's teams that made it to four out of the first 11 Super Bowls. When he didn't get in on that, that was a blow. And I hope that he does because, you know, people didn't think that Mick Tinglehoff would get in, but eventually he fell into the chamber of this backlog of senior candidates and he got in. Unfortunately, you know, when Mick got in, you know, Mick's health wasn't the greatest, but didn't really enjoy like he should have. I don't know how much of he was aware of what was going on. Created one of the greatest scenes. Unfortunately, you know, it was a great scene when Fran Tarkenton went up and shared that moment with Mick.
Right. That was a big deal. I was happy to see that. And Fran really kind of came forward and took care of things. That was a neat moment.
Do you think Marshall would be in if the Vikings had won one of those Super Bowls? Or how important are championships to somebody's chances, and does it vary by position? Like a quarterback obviously might get more credit for winning a Super Bowl than a defensive lineman would, but you hear that a lot from people saying that maybe they too much weight is put on who is the Super Bowl or who has a ring.
Well, yeah, I mean, that probably hurt him, especially, you know, early in his eligibility years, because you saw that, you know, guys weren't getting in, and I think Tarkenton waited 3 years. You know, like maybe a Lynn Swann, if they don't win those Super Bowls, maybe he doesn't get in. So, yeah, I think it's an impact. It's you can't change their careers. You can't say if he would have won a Super Bowl or – You know, you hear it a lot of the arguments now you hear in the room is, well, if he had played with a better quarterback or if he had been on a better team or if he hadn't been hurt, you know, there's a lot of ifs. And I always have a hard time, you know, accepting the ifs. You know, we can't go back and rewrite the history. And it's hard for me to read the minds of 47 other people because half the time I don't know what's in my own head, you know. So to me, it's hard to, you know. If you did a survey and everyone was completely honest, and maybe, you know, maybe if championships do have an impact, but I don't know if you because you could say, yeah, it affected Jim, but Carl Eller's in the Hall of Fame and Paul Krause is in the Hall of Fame and Fran Tarkenton's in the Hall of Fame, Bud Grant's in the Hall of Fame, you know, with the Bills, Marv Levy, you know,
Bruce Smith,
yeah, Bobby all those
Reed.
Guys.
Yeah. It takes longer, I think, but yeah, eventually I think the cream rises to the top. And you made the point earlier, some years I just look at the class and I just think, ooh, that's brutal. You know what I mean? There's so many, you know, just really, really deserving people, but it's a Hall of Fame. I mean, it should be hard to get into. You said that.
And one thing that bothers me, especially when you get a, and I always thought that it would happen. I used to joke with, because I worked in Canton for 12 years. And got to know Joe Horrigan, Joe Horrigan knows the most about football history of anybody in the walking the planet right now. I mean, he's a walking encyclopedia of NFL history. And I used to joke with him. I said, you know, as these players become more and more, you know, entitled, you're going to find a guy that's not going to show up. And, you know, T.O. ended up being that guy. I kind of joked. I thought maybe Moss would be that guy. But, you know, Randy matured, toward, especially after he left football and was well deserving as a first ballot guy. But yeah, it's when you look at it, the first ballot guys are the guys who are true Hall of Famers. You just walk in and you say Brett Favre, you say Peyton Manning, but there are a lot of guys like Jim Marshall that deserve to be in, but you know, just aren't in there. It's unfortunate.
Go ahead, Joe. I've asked plenty. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, during the season, Mike Tice had tweeted something that I covered as an article, essentially saying that he believed that the Hall of Fame voting process should open up to former coaches and former players. And I don't know what the distinction there would be if people had to play X amount of years or coach X amount of years. But, you know, go from the 48 people you're talking about to, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that would make the process more fair, or would that add more bias from which players are on which teams voting for their teammates? It's an interesting concept, I suppose. But
it's so interesting that it's actually happening. You can tell Ticey, Tony Dungy is a Hall of Fame selector. Bill Polian is a Hall of Fame selector. Dan Fouts is a Hall of Fame selector. James Lofton is a Hall of Fame selector. And other guys have been asked that I can't, you know, there's two that I know of that were asked and said they didn't have the time for it. But it's happening. And believe me, this was Tony and Bill's first year in the room. It was virtual this year, which doesn't really matter, but they were in the room. Yeah, they're invaluable. And Fouts and James Lofton have been in for a handful of years. And yeah, they're invaluable. And that's when people, you know, bring that to you, they bring it a lot of times, they bring it to you as almost like a club they're coming after you. Like, you know, you should open it up to everybody. And, well, A, I don't make the rules. I could care less. They asked me to do it. I've followed the NFL since Joe was following Abraham Lincoln. And
wow. So
I decided, you know, yeah, I'll do it. I did it for Sid for a while. Then I became the full-time guy and have a tremendous respect for the Hall of Fame. Used to live in Canton. So, yeah, I'd be all in favor. And I think we're going to see more of that. We're going to see, as you see, the discussions enhanced by a Bill Polian or a Tony Dungy, Dan Fouts, James Lofton. You're probably going to see more and more. But, you know, there has to be guys in there that take it seriously. You know, quite frankly, there's a lot of NFL players, great NFL players, that, you know, they didn't watch the NFL growing up. They didn't watch the NFL when they were in the NFL, and they certainly aren't watching it now because they've moved on to business interest or they're done with the game. I mean, what you can't have happen is just get someone in there that just doesn't care about it and they just want to get their buddies in. you know, a lot of times you'll sit there and watch the honor show or a show that's introducing the Hall of Famers, and as each guy, you know, as they introduce each guy, they'll say, oh, you know, this, you know, be 15 guys that, you know, there'll be a panel of former players or Hall of Famers. And each guy that doesn't get in, it's a crime against humanity that guy didn't get in. And as, you know, Bill and Tony and Dan and James have found out, when you're sitting there with that ballot, you know, there's no, hey, let's put 10 guys in, let's put 15 guys in. It's five guys. It's five guys. Make your choice. And there's no, you know, just put them all in.
What about that? Doesn't that, you know, isn't a Hall of Famer a Hall of Famer? And it shouldn't matter how many guys you have to, I mean, why couldn't you change that and to make sure you get all the Hall of Famers in? I'm asking this as devil's advocate.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't be open to that because it, you know, baseball, I don't want to speak out of turn because I don't know a whole lot about baseball, but I sort of respect baseball when there are years that, I think maybe this is a year that nobody got in.
Right. That's correct.
You know, yeah. I'm okay with that. You know, I know there's a lot of selectors, and I'm not saying anybody who got in shouldn't get in. I'm not going down that path. What I'm saying is that I would rather have no minimum than taking away the maximum. You know, I mean, obviously, I don't know what Cooperstown does when there's no Hall of Famer. You know, do they just not have a ceremony? You know, with Canton, you know, there's a minimum because there's a big show every year that they put on, and they need Hall of Famers for that show. But I don't have a problem with baseball. If there's not a Hall of Famer, no one goes in that year. So, and I know that, I don't know how many people vote on baseball Hall of Fame, but I know it's a lot more than football.
And it feels like with baseball too, like a lot of the guys that would otherwise be in from a time perspective, or if, you know, being eligible for the first time, have a lot of the so-called asterisks by their career. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, A-Rod, even when he's, if he's eligible now, I don't think he is yet, but the steroid era essentially is, you know, coming of age for eligibility, or, you know, a lot of those guys are floating around for the ninth time. I think that has a huge impact on whether or not they can make the Hall. I don't think they ever will. I think it's like, you know, I don't know. Not to get into baseball, but I kind of thought, you know, Barry Bonds was great and didn't need steroids. And he did amazing things on steroids when everyone else was on steroids. So I'm kind of on two minds in that regard, just because if everyone was doing it, yes, it's cheating, but isn't that kind of the main thing with baseball? Or is everyone that is on Houston not going to make the Hall of Fame now because they're stealing signs or whatever? You know, it's an interesting thing. I've always kind of thought one of the main, if you're not cheating in baseball, at least trying to, you're not doing your job, is, I think, the adage. What do you think about Chuck Foreman, though? Sansevier wrote an article about him and essentially interviewed him for it. And the crux of it was Foreman felt that the team wasn't advocating for him. And if the team doesn't push for you, you stand no chance.
Yeah, I don't believe that at all, because there's guys that have gone in where the team didn't advocate at all. And there's guys where the team stepped up and advocated for, you know, like the probably the greatest push that the Vikings have made in recent years is Jim Marshall. And I they asked me what to do. And I, you know, I don't know that it, if someone calls you, how much impact it has on you. But I said, you know, one of the most trustworthy guys, and the most trustworthy guy, probably the voice in this, the history of this franchise, is Bud Grant. So get Bud involved and tell him why, you know, because it goes, you know, Jim has the games played, the starts played, the sacks, just, you know, when he retired, he had played 20 years out of the NFL's, however many, 60 years or whatever it was. I mean, he was just, he was there forever and he played at a high level and for that many years. But, you know, Bud Grant made calls and it didn't gain any traction. So, you know, and you've had other guys where I don't believe they've done anything, and not that they should do anything. I mean, people need to do their own homework in some regard, but like a Randall McDaniel or John Randall, you know, there's too many examples of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that the team didn't push for, that if you're going to make the argument that you're done if the team doesn't push for you, I just, there's too much evidence on the other side of it.
Mark, what is the voting, or I should say the people like you, the Hall of Fame voters, what does that group look like? Are they more like Sid and you, or are they?
I'm one of the young bucks, baby.
Okay. I'm gonna say, he threw you in the same boat with Sid Hartman, so there was his payback for the Abe Lincoln comments.
Thanks, right. Thank you, Jim. That's where I was going for. But, I mean, are there a lot of younger guys now that might not know or can put into context the Jim Marshall and what he meant to the league? I mean, you're saying some nice things that he's played this percentage of the league to that point, but they don't, you know, I don't think they can have that context in their brain. Well, it's laid right out there in front of them.
Well, that's another, you know, twist. There's another twist to the process is that, you know, once you're retired 25 years, your eligibility as a modern era player expires. You go into a senior committee, and there's probably 8 or 10. I'm not sure, 8 or 10. I'm not on the senior committee selection committee, but they meet separately, you know, to present a candidate to the full committee, and that senior committee is aided by two former Hall of Famers from that similar eras. So, you know, Jim Marshall's name has been in the hopper of those senior candidates for, you know, however many years it's been since he's been retired, 25 years. You know, he was in there with the likes of, you know, Mick Tinglehoff, which came out of that hopper, you know. So it's not the young guys, or I guess young in the selection committee. Like Therese was 37, and he might have been one of the youngest, probably was the youngest guy in there. But, you know, the senior guys like Jim Marshall are being analyzed by senior committee members who are getting help from contemporaries of those players. So it's not like, I mean, they're getting so much extra vetting that when the senior, you typically see when a senior committee candidate is presented to the full committee, he goes in because he's been so well vetted.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, there's never been a player that Bud Grant would love in there more than Jim Marshall. And, you know, having grown up watching, I'd agree with him.
Yeah, I think Jim is Jim was the Jim and Mick Tinglehoff were the Vikings, the heart and soul of the Vikings, and without those two, you know, and Bud Grant has said this to me and other people, I'm sure, but without Jim and Mick coming on board to Bud's program, and Bud would have been run out. You know, Bud was not at that. You know, he's young at that time. You know, Marshall had bought in, and if Marshall hadn't bought into his program, then Bud Grant's probably not Bud Grant.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I wonder what the new age of younger guys and this proliferation of statistics and analytics kind of taking over. Everyone's trying to quantify the unquantifiable. And I wrote an article this week on Purple PTSD. Pro Football Reference came out with a Hall of Fame meter, putting together all these statistics to find the probability that current or recently retired players will make the Hall of Fame, and it had like Harrison Smith at like a 37, and the average number was like 110 to get in for a safety. I'm not the biggest fan of analytics. I understand that they serve a purpose, but I think a lot of those guys think that they can just throw statistics out in a debate, you know, and basically say, well, see, this, the, you know, it doesn't tell the entire story of a game with an incredible amount of variables. And so I just wanted your take kind of on if you've noticed some more of that creeping into the process, or if you're as, you know, kind of against it as I am.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somewhere closer to Zimmer when it comes to analytics than I am a lot of the people who cover the NFL now. You know, I just, every time an analytic number is thrown at me, I think of, well, here's X, Y, and Z of why maybe that happened. That, or I say a missed tackle. Say maybe a guy leaves his position and forces a guy to change directions. He misses the tackle, but someone else makes it. All these different things go through my mind when I hear all these analytics. But, you know, I also, when it comes to, like, people putting numbers on guys whose careers aren't done, and, you know, people were talking about Harrison Smith as a Hall of Famer when Harrison Smith was in his sixth year or whatever. You know, he's made an All-Pro, first team All-Pro, and he's a terrific player. So yeah, he has a chance. But it's just after the Super Bowl, you know, I was watching TV, and obviously, yeah, 24 hours, you got to fill it with stuff. But it's like you know, Patrick Mahomes, you know, who's what, 25 years old. You know, now that he's like, if he were to retire today, is he a Hall of Famer? And okay, so I'm thinking, all right, yeah. The discussion start getting, maybe it'll be on draft day now where we start talking about whether it's a Hall of Famer. I just don't get it, you know.
Mark, did the process, you mentioned that Blue Ribbon Committee and the sort of the expansion they did a year ago. I found it really, I don't want to say suspicious or distasteful, but to have the, you know, the head of the whole committee, like, walk onto the middle of the NFL Today and then, or, you know, CBS's show, and let Bill Cowher know and let Jimmy Johnson know that they'd been voted into the Hall of Fame. And I'm like, seriously? I mean, it just seemed like it was such a self-promoting vehicle. And not to say that those two weren't innovative and obviously Super Bowl winning coaches and very good at what they did. But again, I think of a Jim Marshall. Did that come at the expense of a Jim Marshall?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, yeah, that's not my question for me. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's,
were they from the same pool?
I have a hard time believing that if you look at who was on the Blue Ribbon Committee, that they picked those two just for that purpose. Now, you know, the Hall of Fame has changed. I mean, I go back when I worked in Canton in the 80s and early and mid 90s, you know, the Hall of Fame was, you know, on the front steps of the Hall of Fame. The speeches, sometimes the game was kicking off before the speeches were over. And, you know, now it's a 3 or 4 day process of, you know, the speeches are separate. They're in the stadium. I mean, it's gone from a mom and pop operation to, you know, big time corporate. And so, yeah, they've, you know, they're going to seize those moments. But I don't think that Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson got in for that reason. Because even though the committee, you know, they changed their bylaws and they, for that year, to get 20 more guys in, bypassed us, the selection committee, to put in. But there were some people on the selection committee that were on this Blue Ribbon Committee. But originally they were going to have present the 20 to the full committee, and then we had to vote yes or no on all 20. If we had disagreed with one person on their 20, we could vote no, and it would wipe out the whole class. Well, I think they got spooked that maybe there'd be too many of us, because you have to get 80% of the votes for the full committee. I think they got spooked that maybe they wouldn't get 80% in it, and they would have 20 people not get in. So I think it was changed again to where the Blue Ribbon Committee selected that class, and we didn't have anything to do with it.
Mark, you said you were back in Canton in the 80s. Was that the 1880s or the Grover Cleveland area? Or what was that?
The 1780.
1780s. Okay.
I lived in a nice little log cabin, Joe.
Just a second. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this as well. What are your thoughts on the Vikings as of right now? What do you think the franchise is generally? I mean, maybe looking at 2020 and then what's happening with free agency and the cap moving forward. Do you think they're on the upswing or...
I don't know. I mean, last year was just such a, I mean, from start to finish, it was, I mean, we overestimated, even without an off season. I think I picked them 9-7. I generally pick 8-8 because that's the closest to being right, whether you're there good or bad. So it's just so hard to tell. Things change so much. I mean, you go into, there's no off season. They had all those at the worst possible time with the rookie corners. Yeah, and then Danielle Hunter, each day he's standing there in the summer, I'm like, this isn't right. I said, and even though Zimmer was downplaying it, I'm like, until this guy shows up, this isn't good. And so you lose one of the best pass rushers in the league. And then before that, Michael Pierce, and then the opts out. And, you know, to me, it's just so many things happen during the season that can't happen during the season that can just wipe things out. And boy, did they, you know, the injuries just clobbered them. So, you know, if they're completely healthy, if they're, you know, got to keep adding to the offensive line. And, you know, they certainly have the talent offensively and the coaching ability defensively, I think, to bounce back. I mean, I think the last four NFC Super Bowl teams didn't miss the playoffs the year before. Wow. You know, Tampa Bay, obviously, I mean, it was a perfect storm for them because they had a really good, extremely talented roster and was missing only one piece at quarterback, and that one piece happens to be Tom Brady, who just continues to amaze. But there are other examples. Philadelphia, I think when they won it, they missed the playoffs the year before. When the Rams made the Super Bowl, they didn't make the playoffs the year before. So it's a league that just changes. You know, you can change immediately from year to year. As we find out with the Vikings, you know, each year it's you're out of the playoffs, you're in the playoffs. I think they need to establish some consistency and you know, their window for opportunity was 2019 when they had, you know, the quarterback they wanted and all the defensive players that they wanted, and they were healthy. So they, when they missed it there, then, you know, you looked at a reboot.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insight with us. It's means a lot to us, and you know, not bringing up how many mulligans Oberle takes, I think, is a good sign that you're trustworthy.
Not enough, because playing with golf with Craig is a handicap all of its own. So I just sort of...
Joe, we were in a golf tournament. I shouldn't call it a tournament, but we played this some buddies down in Florida for years. And Joe is by himself in a sand trap, and he stops play, and there's people behind us. And he stops playing. He says, guys, come over here. We're like, what? So I walk over, and he's like, you know, my club touched the sand, and I got to call a penalty on myself. And I said, come on, Joe. I said, look around. You think we care if you touch the sand or not? Well, he wasn't in there digging it in a practice shot. He just grazed it like someone on CBS was going to, a viewer was going to call in and report him or something. And I said, hit the ball, Joe.
That's the most orderly story I've ever heard in my entire life.
Well, yeah, he's a stickler.
I wrote a rules column for the Minneapolis or Minnesota Golfer for years. I mean, you know, it's kind of hypocritical if I don't play by the rules when I tell everybody else to. So better call that.
Yeah, as golf's finding out, Joe, some of the rules were stupid. And that's why they're changing them, Joe. They're becoming more like our FUBAR rules than they are the PGA Tour rules.
Yes.
FDA.
I actually lettered in golf. I don't know, Joe, if you knew that, or maybe I took that.
Yes, I have.
In high school, and the best way to sum up my abilities at the time, which were better than they are now, was when I turned my scorecard in after a tournament. The person would laugh and say, "No, really, what was your score?" they would put me with the number one guys on the other team because I would take so long that it would frustrate the opponent, and their scores would go down by like 8 strokes. Not my thing. More of
tough
a hockey
story
thing.
In golf yesterday, by for crying out loud. Tiger Woods deal, man. I hope somehow he can rally and come back. You know, I don't need to see him on a golf course. That's severe stuff. But
what's the latest on that? Because I know you like just had back surgery, so then this happens. Yeah. I mean,
It sounds like there are two broken bones in his lower leg, and then his ankle
shattered bones. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's got a pin in his leg and a bunch of screws and other metal in his foot or his ankle to put that back together. And at 45 years old, I don't know how you come back from that, but I just hope he does well and he can walk again it comes back.
Yeah, with the torque that you put on your ankle with the swing, that's going to be – because I shattered my ankle in 3 places like 2 years ago when I had surgery. I broke my foot too. And it's – they basically just fuse everything because there's so many bones. There's not a whole lot they can do there. Mm-hmm. But, man, that guy just has been accumulating injuries, it seems like. But he got away with some of the worst of it, from avoiding some of the worst of it.
When I came to Star Tribune in 99, John Rowe retired before the 2000 golf season. And they said, does anyone want to be the golf writer? And I said, yeah, I'd love to be the golf writer. And my first 3 majors that I covered was Tiger Woods at Pebble Beach in 2000, Tiger Woods at Valhalla in the PGA in 2000, the Bob May playoff. And the third one was I didn't go to the British Open, but the third one was the Tiger Slam at the Augusta the next year.
Wow.
And I think I covered like 11 majors, 11 or 12, and Tiger won 6 of them or something. It was, it was such a highlight of just being somewhere in person to see him play and just to see what he could do. If you play golf, you have a bigger respect for what he's doing. But just even the people who don't play golf, I think, looked at things he did and went, wow, you know, he keeps making these putts or he keeps making these shots. And it was impressive to watch.
Good time to be a golf writer, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a wheelhouse.
Yeah, he really changed the game. I mean, it was younger sponsors. Kids started playing it more and more. Kids in the inner city where I grew up started playing it. I actually got to meet him at Hiawatha through this program at my school, where he tried to, if he made a hole in one on a par 3, like he was going to donate $1 million to something. And he spent like a lot of individual time with each kid. It was really
nice,
really kind of a crazy experience, to be honest with you, because that was like peak Tiger Woods fame, mostly like 2000-2001. So, yeah, hopefully things turn out well for him. Yeah. But thanks again, Mark, for stopping onto the show. You're always welcome to stop by whenever you'd like. Hopefully during the season we can chat more about the current Vikings team and see what happens, because I'm a little worried about the COVID cap as I keep bringing up and some of these contracts, especially on defense. I'm not entirely sure some of the guys will be back. I'm a little worried about Daniel Hunter's acceptance of the status quo in regards to how he's getting paid. It seems like there's going to be a reckoning. I don't know if I'm wrong about that, but it keeps me up at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's the NFL. It changes, you know. It's going to start changing quickly here when the league year opens, and you never bring back the same exact team. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's great to have you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks
for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
And everyone obviously can check out Mark in the Star Tribune sports section. Great guy, great insight, man. That
What check him out on Twitter too, because he's a lot of fun there.
Yeah. The
I try to keep my mouth shut on Twitter, Joe. that doesn't always work.
I think it's at Mark Craig NFL right on Twitter. You can see him and Overly jawing back and forth. But I think that's a good place to put a pin in it for this week. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show, sharing it, subscribing to it on the different podcast platforms. I want to thank everybody in Detroit Lakes for tuning in every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Check us out next week at 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock p.m. on KBLM Sports or on VikingsTerritory.com or PTSD.com. A little distracted. Sorry about that. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. It's never a dull moment in the Johnson household. I will check in with everyone next week. Skol.
Thanks, guys.